Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, today is the last day the Mississippi Senate can take up a House bill to transform how public schools are funded. Then, from the Gulf States newsroom, the debate continues over the rights of frozen embryos in Alabama. IVF treatments were halted. Some worry the new law that allowed them to resume may not be enough. Plus, it's National Public Health Week, and health officials are reminding folks how a healthy life can change medical outcomes for the better. All throughout the week, the Mississippi Department of Health is raising key issues about public health as part of National Public Health Week. Doctors are reminding folks to get their annual checkups and thank the physicians, nurses, and emergency responders who help keep us healthy. Dr. Dan Edney is a state health officer for Mississippi. He tells our Kobe Vance, getting healthy now can make living a healthy life easier in the long run.
Everybody's Mississippi State Department of Health. We're all engaged heavily in the work of public health, and then working with partners, community partners at the Public Health Institute, at the Mississippi Public Health Association, all of our good community partners that are working throughout the state to try to make the lives of Mississippians better is, in my opinion, worthy of celebrating. I don't want to imagine a world in Mississippi without the health department and without the work that's done by our public health workforce. I think everything that's done through the efforts of public health make Mississippi a better place. You know, the mission of the Mississippi State Department of Health is to protect and advance the health and safety well-being of everyone in Mississippi, and I always add with no exceptions. You know, we're touching every life every day. We are saving lives every day by protecting the water, protecting the food, keeping hospitals safe, keeping nursing homes safe. You know, it just goes on and on and on, the things that we do every day to make sure that Mississippi is healthier and safer than it would be without us.
I know public health is a pretty broad topic, but is there anything that y'all are singling out this week that y'all want Mississippians to either be aware of or inform them about?
We're each day emphasizing different areas of public health, and now we are focusing on population health, which a lot of the work that we do has to do with safety issues, with clean water, safe food, safe child care, on and on and on with our regulatory work. And then population health relates to our work in trying to make the state itself healthier, such as reduction in the rates of obesity that we're seeing and reduction in the rates of diabetes that we're seeing, specifically through a lot of our work. We'll be emphasizing the impact of our preventive health and health equity work. A lot of folks understand our communicable disease prevention work and how important it is for the health department to be vigilant for outbreaks of infectious diseases like hepatitis or salmonella. We're going to be emphasizing our work with emergency preparedness and disaster response, where we score very high in the national level. Our work with the emergency services industry throughout the state with our making sure that access to emergency care, Beginnings 911 is healthy and robust. And then, you know, can't leave out those wonderful county health departments and the hard work that our field services puts in to provide access to core community public health services as much as we can throughout all the counties of our state. That's a heavy lift.
Just 4 years ago at this time, we were facing lockdowns, mask mandates, things like that all across the nation. What's it like to see where we are now and begin to see that, you know, a way to show how public health can affect everyday life?
Well, one thing that we're always doing is, as I said, looking for that next dangerous pathogen for which the population has no immunity. You know, we are on the lookout every year for the true superflu. And thankfully, COVID was not that. COVID was horrible, extremely impactful, and we cannot forget the 15,000 Mississippians who died from COVID and the fact that we continue to lose Mississippians. But the superflu is still yet to come, and it's important that we as part of the public health network of the nation are prepared for that. You know, you're seeing more and more measles outbreaks around the country, which is very distressful. My colleague in Georgia just had to contain a measles outbreak in Georgia. We've had outbreaks in Florida and New Orleans, you know, all right around us. And I know down the road that we're likely to start having measles outbreaks again in Mississippi, and it's our job to be prepared to respond quickly and contain those outbreaks.
Well, Dr. Adney, that answers all my questions on that. One thing I did want to ask before we go is your thoughts on the current status of Medicaid bills that are moving through the legislature.
Well, I'm, you know, just excited and grateful that, you know, the issue of access to care for Mississippians is, you know, a hot topic of discussion at the legislature. I'm anxious to see what is worked out to improve that access, and I'm encouraged at this point. I've been preaching access to care is what it's going to take to get us off the bottom in health, and I think we're seeing, you know, leadership both in the House and Senate proposing answers that help move us in the right direction.
Dr. Dan Nenny is the state health officer from Mississippi. Dr. Edney, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Coming up, today's a major deadline in the Mississippi legislature for bills that originated in the opposite chamber, that is, and we'll highlight one of them when we come back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Buttress, host of Southern Remedies, Relatively Speaking. Join the conversation every Tuesday at 11 as we dissect issues that are important to you and your family. That's Relatively Speaking, Tuesdays only on MPB Think Radio.
Connect with the people looking to connect with you. Become an underwriter with Mississippi Public Broadcasting. For more information, go to mpbonline.org/more/underwriting.
Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Family Fun Day will be in the Pole Gymnasium on the campus of Mississippi University for Women in Columbus on Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. MPB has partnered with the Mississippi School for Mathematics and Science, MUW, and the Preservation Society of Columbus to host the free event. Come and meet MPB's own Ed Said. The whole family can enjoy music, a health fair, games and activities related to science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Register at education.mpbonline.org.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Today's a major deadline in the state legislature for bills that originated in the opposite chamber. In the Senate, lawmakers are considering if they will take up House Bill 1453, the INSPIRE Act. It's a new school funding formula. The House wants to create a new plan for schools based on a system of weighted funding, dependent on students' needs. But the Senate wants to modify the existing formula, which is the Mississippi Adequate Education Program. It provides funding based on the needs of the school, or some say injects funding into schools. Republican Representative Kent McCarty of Hattiesburg is vice chair of the House Education Committee, and he authored the Inspire Act. He speaks with At Issues, Michael Guidry, and he says it's going to be an uphill battle to get lawmakers in the Senate to agree to his new formula, but McCarty says this could mean millions more in funding for public schools.
I understand the appeal, especially on paper, of something like an injective formula. And again, I say that as somebody who's not opposed to looking at that. But the issue is, with anything like that, we fund government the way that we fund government. I mean, we set the appropriation in the legislature, and that's not a perfect process, and I'm not saying that it's the right way to do it. But that is the reality of every state legislature in the country. We fund what we fund. So for us to have an objective formula on the front end is fine. But if we're not going to follow it, which we've only done, we all know the numbers. We've only done that twice since MAP was passed. And again, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but that's the reality. So what I wanted to do, and what we in the House wanted to do, and what the Speaker has set out in his first speech as Speaker when he was elected Speaker of the House, was he wanted to address the inequities in the formula. And that objective front end number, whatever it is, doesn't do anything to address the inequity. That's just a starting point. So we basically said, okay, we're going to look at what we're doing now, which is what we did. We looked at the funding level we're set now. Our base student cost that we set in year one is a little bit higher when you look at the actual per student enrolled number, because this is an enrollment-based formula, whereas MAP is an attendance-based distribution. We looked at the number we're spending per student. We set that number higher than that, and then we added these weights on top of it to target those students that require more resources. And you know, that whatever those weights look like serve different purposes, but that is the way that we achieve the equity that we wanted to fix with the formula. So basically, so that whatever amount we appropriated, this was our mission, whatever amount we appropriate, we want to make sure that that money is spent in the most effective way possible for the students who need it the most. And that's what Inspire does.
All right. So then the question about funding comes in. You brought in that, you know, the MAP and the lack of funding it received. It's a formula. The legislature is supposed to fund it according to the formula, but it hasn't. How can we be ensured that the legislature will fund if Inspire were to become law, and your approach is to be the way education is funded in Mississippi? How and what insurances can the legislature make that funding will be matched on a year-to-year basis?
Well, I think, you know, for one thing, just from an optics perspective, and I hate to talk about things in terms of optics, but from an optics perspective, we've done the work to develop this new formula. Say we get it across the finish line. It will be a huge political issue for all of us to come back next year and say, well, we just passed this perfect formula that we love so much, but we can't afford it already in year two. So I think that pressure exists on us right now anyway. And I think with a formula like Inspire, I really do believe this, I think people will see in time how much more payoff we get from that investment in education with a formula like Inspire, that sending money to districts that really need it. And I want to go like a step deeper under that if I can. You know, with MAP, I know there's been a lot of criticism through the years that it's, you know, too old and too confusing and all that. And I've said this multiple times, I don't subscribe to any of that. My issue with MAP is that this same, you know, we're putting $250 million new in education. If we put that same $250 million in education, that's going to put more money into districts that already have the local tax base to pay for their students' education, to provide for those needs, and a lot less in the districts that need it the most. And I want to go even a step further and talk about JPS-PEN, and I think this is the best example of how much better a job it does at providing equity. If you fully funded MAP today for 2025, that would put, I think, about $2 million more dollars into JPS over last year's school funding. If you fully fund Inspire right now for 2025, which we've passed a bill to do that, that would put $24 million into JPS's budget for 2025 and onward.
Republican Representative Kent McCarty of Hattiesburg is author of the Inspire Act. Several education groups have come out in favor of the House's plan. Others have concerns about what it could mean for schools long term. Nancy Loom is executive director of the Parents Campaign. She says the existing MAEP formula could be improved, but the Inspire Act isn't the answer.
The analysis that we did was based on the numbers that were distributed, that the House leadership distributed to their members, to the House members, when they debated that bill, which was a couple of weeks ago. And we analyzed those numbers compared to the bill that the Senate proposed, which was the following day. And we used the numbers that each chamber handed out to their own members to do that analysis. And we compared both of those to full funding of the current MAEP formula. The result is that Inspire doesn't perform very well compared to those other plans, particularly when you move to future years. Initially, it doesn't do very well, but it gets worse because the little inflation factor that they included in their plan doesn't kick in until 4 years down the road, and then it's much smaller than the inflation factor in both the MAP and the Senate plan. In terms of using the old numbers, so those were the numbers we used, and apparently the numbers that the House distributed to their members used year-old local ad valorem information. And so they've now come out with new numbers that use more current data. So we agreed to go ahead and run another analysis using those numbers. And we have sent that out to our members this evening. And so they can see that analysis, and the difference is just marginal. It's very little difference. Still, the MAEP in out years eventually outperforms the INSPIRE, provides more funding to each district, every district except one. And the Senate plan also provides more funding to every district except five. And so these are even the highest poverty districts, which I know that was the goal of the INSPIRE plan, was to get more funding to high poverty districts, which is a terrific goal. But because of the way that it's structured, it just doesn't work very well for many districts at all.
McCarty said that making projections based on what inflation could be 10 years from now isn't a substantive critique to levy at INSPIRE, that of course, you know, if inflation increases, that lawmakers could come back and put more funding into INSPIRE or increase the inflation adjustment as needed. So how would you respond to that?
Well, what we used was what is actually in the law, what they actually passed off the floor of the House. So, of course, they can come back and change any law. But what we have to compare is what they actually did pass out of the House, what they are proposing compared to what the Senate has passed out of the Senate and what is already law. And so we used a 10-year average for the inflation factor. But the problem is that they multiply that times a very small percent of the base cost, smaller than either the MAEP or the Senate. So regardless of what inflation is, each plan uses a different proportion of the base cost to multiply that on out. And so we use the very same figures for all of them. So the comparison is an apples-to-apples comparison of what you would get with each one of those plans.
Nancy Loom is executive director of the Parents Campaign. She spoke with our Will Stribling. Coming up from the Gulf States Newsroom, the debate continues over the rights of frozen embryos in Alabama and a recent law they say may not be enough. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Family Fun Day will be in the Pohl Gymnasium on the campus of Mississippi University for Women in Columbus on Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. MPB has partnered with the Mississippi School for Mathematics and Science, MUW, and the Preservation Society of Columbus to host the free event. Come and meet MPB's own Ed Said. The whole family can enjoy music, a health fair, games and activities related to science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Register at education.mpbonline.org.
What can you do with the MPB Radio app? Listen live, hear local news, view the schedule, make a contribution, listen to shows on demand, and interact with social media. Get the app for your smartphone now.
Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit provides information on how you can lead a healthy lifestyle. I'm the host, Josie Bidwell. Search for and subscribe to Southern Remedy on any podcasting app to not miss any episode.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Fertility treatments in Alabama are in limbo. Last month, the state Supreme Court ruled frozen embryos are considered children. Then the state passed a law meant to protect IVF. But as Drew Hawkins with the Gulf States Newsroom reports, some worry the protections may not be enough.
Gabby Price is off work on Fridays, so that means it's time for laundry. Loads and loads of laundry. She and her husband live in a small camper. It's parked on a family member's rural land in Moody, Alabama. They both come from big families and dream of having their own someday. But Price found out she has a condition that could crush that dream.
The doctor's exact words to me were, "You are going to have a really difficult time conceiving, even with medical intervention."
So they sold the home they used to own and moved into this camper to pay for fertility treatments. And they've tried almost everything.
The ovulation test, home remedies, medicated cycles, two IUIs, seed cycling, and these types of things.
They've been spending thousands of dollars. And after almost 2 years of treatments, Price got pregnant. But she had a miscarriage just a month later.
There was just so much physical and mental anguish that I wasn't prepared for.
After her miscarriage, Price met with her doctor, and she decided to try IVF, even though it would cost more than $15,000. Just before she was set to start, the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that fertilized embryos have the same rights as children. IVF treatments across the state shut down. Patients and doctors flocked to the legislature to demand action, including Price.
I actually ran into my doctor at the state house. We all went to the state house to talk to our senators, our representatives.
Many clinics resumed treatments after Alabama passed a law that protects IVF providers from prosecution. But Price is still worried. If procedures were paused again, she says she doesn't have enough money to travel out of state for treatments.
It is a little bit terrifying for me, and even a little bit further than when discussing IVF, is that there are a lot of us, patients, doctors alike, that are really worried about how far this is going to go.
Advocates say she's right to be worried. The underlying court ruling that frozen embryos have the same rights as a person is still the law of the land.
Yeah, personhood comes with tremendous consequences.
Michelle Colon is with Shiro Mississippi, a reproductive justice organization. For years, she and others have been warning that efforts to ban abortion could put IVF at risk.
Our side was the one that brought up and said, wait a minute, this particular agenda, so to speak, or strategy has unintended consequences.
After the Alabama Supreme Court ruling, politicians found themselves under pressure to save IVF. But Republicans still wanted to keep personhood intact. Here's Republican Representative Mark Gidley arguing that frozen embryos should still be considered children.
It's a life. It's taking on a life. It's growing. It's living. It's a living being. It just needs to be implanted so it can continue to grow.
Former U.S. Senator from Alabama Doug Jones is intimately familiar with Alabama state politics. He saw personhood come up during debates around abortion back when Roe v. Wade was in place.
They want to send a political message that is the right political message for them in the moment, and they don't have any thought to the potential consequences of what would happen.
Consequences like access to IVF. And Jones does not mince words when talking about the most conservative Republicans in Alabama.
I think most of them really believe that. It really shows you how dumb some of these legislators are.
Jones also says he's skeptical about whether the law protecting IVF will be enough.
I'm not sure that the legislation that was passed to try to fix the IVF issue is anything more than a Band-Aid that somebody's going to rip off at some point in a lawsuit.
Gabby Price is paying attention to all of this. She can quote the Supreme Court ruling from memory. But despite all this uncertainty, she isn't letting go of her dream.
We are really at this point just ready to start our family.
IVF is their best hope. But Price knows that the future of her family also lies in the hands of the state. For the Gulf States Newsroom, I'm Drew Hawkins.
The Gulf States Newsroom is a partnership between Mississippi Public Broadcasting and public radio stations in Alabama and Louisiana. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.